Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to get the latest on what's happening in the world of the NFL. We do it every day at this time. I'm Bob, Dave, and Moore. We bring in the professor, John Clayton, for a conversation. Hello, John.
Hello, guys. How are we today?
We're good. We're good. It's sunny outside. It's a nice day. Hopefully, it'll be like this more and more often, so that'll make things a little bit easier. Let's talk about some of the concerns going around about the virtual draft. We heard Harbaugh express his concerns about, you know, sort of the security of the whole thing, hackers and things like that to be concerned about. I know they're gonna give it a little test run, a little mock draft before the actual draft. I feel like the concerns are valid. How do you feel about them?
I think they're whiny. I mean, certainly there's going to be concerns. And you know, and again, I'm not talking about any individual here at the station, but in every station in the country, every TV station, you can see that the feeds break up. And that's just the problem of trying to use the technology. You don't know for sure that everything's going to work. And that's just a reality. And that's, you know, because, you know, I can't tell you how many stations I've been on, and the person on a remote, that all clicks out. And so you have one person, and, you know, it happens here. And again, that's just it. But, you know, when it gets to the point when coaches and general managers now don't want their IT people in the building, I mean, or in their house, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, it's like, you know, any of the IT people that are at the station, I love them to be at the house, because all they do is make things better, make your life better, make your work better. And to think that it's like, oh, they're going to come here and get a disease. I mean, hey, they're as quarantined and away from people as much as anybody else. And when it gets to that point, I think they get a little bit too much into it. But there is a reality that I think that Roger Goodell has got to realize this too. Things are going to go wrong. And if that's the case, you really do need to build more time into this in case something does go wrong.
John, wouldn't you think that the Seahawks would have the advantage technology-wise? I mean, of all the franchises, yeah. I mean, they probably spend the most on technology and IT guys, and they do a great job over there.
They really do. And, of course, I mean, you know, when it's a team that was purchased by Paul Allen, I mean, it's in that family. It's like, yeah, you're going to have the best of the best. And so that, you know, so the you noticed Pete Carroll was on Sirius XM yesterday, and he didn't raise any complaints about that. And, you know, I don't know how many IT people are going to be involved from the Seahawks. Again, it's like I don't think they're going to take a roll call on that, but I know that I would welcome, you know, Vernon or Paul or anybody like that from the station here. Not that they're needed, because they are needed, but again, everything's working so smooth with my stuff. I'm sure it's, you know, reasonably well with everybody else, but it's like, you know, you want these people there. But, you know, I think that, you know, you just got to gut it up. I mean, this is the worst time in our lives, and, you know, you've still got to try to see the best you can to conduct business, and the business is the draft.
All right, well, that draft starts 2 weeks from tomorrow, John, and we're still in a waiting game with Jadeveon Clowney, Ngakoue, all these different things, Everson Griffin. When do you think we'll see some resolution? I mean, you think it'll come right up until draft time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's where the deadline is. And so, you know, because, you know, you can still look at a lot of different things as far as, like, for Jackson. You know, Clowney's on his own island right now, you know, because, you know, Cleveland, I don't think, can do anything until they give him a physical, and you can't get a physical until after the draft. And so, you know, he still risks, you know, maybe even if he would agree to a deal, sign it, it could fall apart because they can fail him on the physical as quickly as anybody else. We've had it happen four times. In the case of Ngakoue, you know, I still get the feeling that he will get traded, and I still, and if it doesn't, and it could happen here. Now, the question is, what price is it going to be? And it's not going to be the Jaguars' asking price. I mean, the only way that Jacksonville is going to get a number one out of Seattle is that if they trade back and they give back the 41st pick in that round, and the second, and 41st pick total, so they give a second round pick back. And so if that's the case, then I think something can get done. But you know, there's a realization down in Jacksonville that you look at their cap, and right now it looks good with $31 million, but today they just submitted the Al Woods contract, and that's 2.75 of cap. So now you take that down, and there's about $7 million tied up in Joe Schobert, and there's like one or two other guys that they've not put in yet. And when you realize that, you know, they have to have 13 $13 million of cap room to be able to sign their draft choices, you can see that something's got to give. And that give is going to most likely be Yannick Ngakoue. And now it's just a matter for what price. And I don't know, you know, what other teams are involved. Some teams think the Giants could be involved for 2 second-round picks, but that would take Ngakoue and put him in a different position at linebacker. And I don't think that's a good fit.
Well, and John, he said yesterday, we played some cuts from him. He did an interview talking about, I want to go to a place where the culture is great and winning is a habit. And, you know, to me, that eliminates a lot of teams, including the Giants. And now, if he's being true to his word, I think that really narrows down the field of teams that could be in play for him. I mean, realistically, where do you think... What teams would you throw in that category where you're talking about an established, great culture, and they have a habit of winning?
Well, I mean, certainly Seattle. You can kind of see between his words what he's saying. Seattle, come get me, because I'm giving you the profile of what I think you are, and that's the profile of what they are. And so, to me, it's tipping it off. Now, maybe another team, but I still can't see them giving up the draft capital to do that, would be Philadelphia, which now, you know, particularly with Doug Peterson coaching, you know, that team is a traditional winner with a good quarterback like Carson Wentz, and they've been to the playoffs. But the problem that they have is that they've got to spend their draft resources on the wide receiver position, because they've done a great job in the defensive line. You know, they've got Javon Hargrave. He came over from Pittsburgh, and so now they've got Hargrave, and they've got Fletcher Cox. They've added Nickel Roby and Darius Slay in the secondary, but they've got nothing at wide receiver. And so they've got to do everything on the offense, not the defense, so I can't see them involved, and I can't really figure out any other teams that could be in the mix. I mean, you can't bring up Tennessee because, you know, again, Ngakoue is more of a pure defensive end than linebacker because he's never really played linebacker. So I have to think when you look at things, Seattle still can do it, but Jacksonville's got to realize that they need to lower their price.
Hey, John, we were just going through the whole thing, the interview with Howard Stern that Tom Brady did, and I don't know if you got to hear any of that. And if you haven't, we could play some of the clips. But, you know, one of the quotes was, I just never cared about legacy. You could just tell, and I don't know how much you heard, but it just seems like this guy really gets it. You know, I mean, he's a big star, and he's probably the best football player of all time. And yet he just, you know, really only cares about just playing football, it seems like.
Yeah, and I think that's... And you can see it in the way he's been, and he's been that way his entire career. It's probably what's helped make him great in the sense that, you know, he focuses on the game. And sometimes I know, you know, particularly if you ask Joey Galloway about this, he can be tough on his wide receivers or tight ends if they don't do things right. I still remember being at a game that Joey made a couple mistakes, and Brady just called him out on the bench. And if you talk to people who have been with the Patriots, I mean, those Friday night meetings with the wide receivers can be pretty tough. But again, he's focused on winning. He's focused on family life. I mean, you know, he's a great family guy with his wife, Giselle. I mean, he does great with the kids. But boy, when you talk about football focus, it's all there, and it's helped make him what he is. And I think that that came out. And I thought the most interesting comment that he made, which of course I think is the most played of the Stern interview, is the one that he says, you know, I thought at the beginning of last year that this was going to be the last year, because you can sense a divorce was in the works, you know, because they didn't get him receivers. He was, you know, he broke away from Bill Belichick during the OTAs for 2 years to spend a little bit more time with the family. And again, he was so focused he can make that up and still go to Super Bowls by missing the OTAs. And then it's a matter, it's like, okay, once you get there, you focus and you win.
And meanwhile, John, we heard from Jameis Winston today saying that it's an honor to be replaced by Tom Brady. I don't even know how to react to that. On the one hand, I'm thinking, man, that's a class comment from Jameis Winston. On the other hand, I'd be spitting mad if I were him.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, I think this is a good sign, because I know I even talked about it on 710 Sport when I did the professor's notes today, because I did it on him. Because, you know, two things that he did in the course of the last 24 hours I thought was good. I mean, he said all the right things. He was very honorable about that, because you think about the fact that, you know, the way things worked out, you know, he probably lost over $25 million, because if they were thinking about re-signing him, you know, he wanted 30, you know, maybe they would have done 20, 25, but he's not going to get that now, and nobody knows where he's going to land, and he doesn't know where he's going to land. He doesn't know what he's going to get. Okay, so he comes back and he makes the honorable comments. That's plus number one. Plus number two, even though he's leaving and he's not going to be in Tampa, he sets up some nice charity things for people that are involved with the virus. That was good. And so I give him a lot of credit. And so, you know, the questions with him, I mean, he is a good guy. I know he's had some problems and stuff like that, and I think he's grown from that. The players like him. He's got a photographic memory. He's a very talented quarterback. I mean, the big thing was you just can't throw 30 interceptions in a season and be the biggest turnover quarterback since coming into the league and think that things are going to go perfectly.
Hey, John, let me bring you back to Jacksonville for a minute because I'm curious. When they were loaded with talent. I mean, remember that defense? They were called Saxonville. They were, you know, this was a team that looked like they were going to be a problem for everybody. To me, their biggest mistake was signing Blake Bortles to that extension, and he came back after that extension, and he was bad once again, and it seemed like it just started to fall apart there. What do you think led to their demise? Because everybody was really high on the young talent, some of them comparing that defense to the Seahawks at the time. What do you think happened there?
Well, their biggest mistake was not signing Blake Bortles to the extension. Their biggest mistake was drafting Blake Bortles because, you know, he had the one good season when he went to the AFC Championship. He did play okay there, but after that and before that and after that, he didn't play well. So that cost him. I mean, like, he had the one year where, of course, he had a nice losing record and he had some nice stats, but that was because he was trailing so much that he was able to put up meaningless numbers on the stats. So now what happens is, you know, they get to a point where they had eight Pro Bowlers on the team on defense. Eight. Think about that, because you have Ramsey, I mean, Bouye, you know, they had, you know, Pro Bowl safety in Gibson, Tashaun Gibson, you know, you had Marcell Dareus, you had Calais Campbell, and Ndokwe went to one Pro Bowl, you know, they had Pro Bowl linebackers. I mean, that team was absolutely loaded, but it was mismanaged. You know, you're right about the Bortles contract extension. That hurt. Then Jalen Ramsey didn't like, you know, Tom Coughlin and the way that Tom was running things. So he wants out, and he gets out. You know, they have now cap problems, so they have to sacrifice, you know, Malik Jackson, who was a Pro Bowler. They had to sacrifice A.J. Bouye eventually, and that would have been more. Deshaun Gibson. So all of a sudden, they go from 8 to 2, and one of the two is a guy that doesn't want to be there, Yannick Ndokwe. So, yeah, it's just completely fallen apart, and it's been mismanaged, and they've paid the price for it.
Hey, John, Rex Ryan was saying that, give Belichick Geno Smith and let's see if he wins. you know, it brings to mind, I don't even know what the situation is at backup quarterback. Is Geno, was he signed for just a one-year deal here? Or?
Yeah, he was on a one-year minimum deal, correct.
Okay. What do you think happens as far as, I know it's not the most exciting topic right now, but backup quarterback for the Seahawks?
Yeah, I think that they can go back to Geno because I think that he liked it out here. I think that, you know, he fits because, again, he has, you know, a little bit of a similar style. He's got a little bit of mobility and all that stuff. And so I don't see any problem in not bringing him back. You know, I don't know what would be better. Because, again, you still want to have, you know, not an older quarterback. I mean, you don't want to bring in Jameis Winston. That's just too much. And I think that, you know, I think Geno could be a candidate, or it's still not out of the question that, you know, they do something in the draft. But to do something in the draft, I think the only way they can do something with a quarterback is that if they take care of the defensive end position, don't give up any of the draft choices, and then they can trade back from 27 to try to get three additional picks that they at least have 10. And in a year like this, when everything's going to be a virtual type of draft, I mean, you probably need more picks because you have more chances to make mistakes. And the more picks you have, the more you can either hit on, or if you make a mistake, you just write it off.
Well, John, I hope they stick at number 27 this year or trade up. So I'm going to disagree with you on that one. In the draft itself, overall, the Bengals, let's assume they're going to take Joe Burrow. The Redskins take Chase Young. Who do you think Detroit will take at number 3?
Jeff Okuda, the cornerback, I think. And again, they're the big mystery in the draft because, you know, you can't tell what their general manager is going to do. You can't tell what Matt Patricia is going to do. I mean, you think about, you know, here's a team that had good veteran leadership and good veteran players, and they got rid of them. I mean, you had Darius Slay, who was, maybe wasn't a leader, but again, was a great player. You got Quandre Diggs, who was a team captain. I mean, you burn out Damon Harrison, Snacks, and so he retires. And so it's like they're chasing their tail. And, they take Golden Tate and they trade him away. And so, you can't tell exactly what they're going to do. And then sometimes they just get too cute in the way that they draft. But I think they made two cornerback moves. They brought in Desmond Trufant, but they still need a stud quarterback on the other side. So I think they do that.
You guys can text in any questions you've got for the professor. 710-710 is the text line. John, as far as what the Seahawks may do with the draft, I'm with Jim. I'd love to see him trade up. I'd love to see him package. Number 27 for me doesn't mean much. They just don't hit that often in the first round. We've talked about it. So if they package that for Ngakoue, I'm in. But the other part of this is we haven't brought up Everson Griffin in a little bit. Do you expect any team to make a move on him? Is he just kind of holding off everybody until he sees what Clowney's going to get? Because that's the way it's been presented. Like, Clowney's the first domino that needs to fall. So is Griffin just hanging back and his agent hanging back before they agree to any deal from anybody to see what Clowney gets?
No, I think he's just waiting for an offer. I think that anything that happens on Clowney is not going to change any number for him because he's 33 years old. And, even in the best case scenario, he's talking about maybe $7 or $8 million, no more. And because, again, you look at, Ndamukong Suh, I mean, he got $8 million. That's pretty much the price you're going to have if you're going to be a defensive player, defensive lineman or so in the mid-30s. And so, you can't break the bank, and I'm sure that he's not trying to break the bank. I think he's just waiting for an offer. And I kind of get the feeling that Seattle's a little gun-shy on him for whatever reason, and so because he wants to be here. He's already come out and said that. And so if he would get an offer, I think he'd take it in a second. Right now, he hasn't had that offer.
All right, John, so the way we've heard from Schneider enough to know that they put first-round grades on guys, right? And
right.
So what do they have? They're picked number 27 this year?
27, correct. Yeah, 27.
So you get to 27, and there's not a single player with a first-round grade. So why would you pick there? Why wouldn't you trade that back or trade it away for somebody like Ngakoue? I mean, that's kind of how it works, right?
Right, you're into John Snyder's head because normally you're only going to have 16 to 17 guys that you're going to have first round grades on, and so that's why John Snyder was one of the foremost guys in doing this. He realized, hey, I'm getting a second rounder, and of course when he does that, and this is why sometimes it doesn't work out. But again, league wide, for the most part, it doesn't work out. We talk about Jermaine Ifedi, being a first round pick. I mean, do you realize, drafted above him and below him, there were five first round picks, including Ifedi, that ended up in free agency this year. This is their big year for free agency. They got minimum salary. Artie Burns in the Pittsburgh cornerback, he got minimum salary. Dotson, the wide receiver, minimum salary. Treadwell, the wide receiver, minimum salary. Five guys drafted between 21 and 32 that basically didn't have a market and just take the minimum. And so it just tells you, it's like, hey, you can get 4 years of a player out of it, even if you get the need of a position. They needed the right tackle, and they got 4 years out. So that wasn't a bust pick. But again, everybody thinks, oh, first rounder, he's going to be a Pro Bowler. Well, now, for the most part, there's only going to be one or two from the 21st pick to the 32nd in any given year.
Boy, everybody seems in love with Jordan Love, John, especially Todd McShay. You see that he's got Love going number 6 overall to the Chargers, so I assume that he thinks he's going to be a better pro than Justin Herbert.
Yeah, I mean, and again, that's where the varied opinions go, and you go through each year, and it's a different game, and you saw that Baker Mayfield was a surprise a couple years ago when he was the first pick in the draft. I mean, you saw that Kyler Murray kind of upset the apple cart, but then turned out to be a great quarterback in his first year, and it looks like he's going to be a quarterback on the rise. So, sometimes you can do it. And again, this year is so different because, the guy that most people thought was going to be the first quarterback, Tua, has the hip injury, has a little bit of an injury history, and there's some people think that, in fact, I saw one report today that two teams took him off their board. Now, again, these are probably teams that aren't going to be drafting quarterbacks because there's only going to be maybe five teams in the first two rounds drafting quarterbacks. But I just kind of say, okay, we'll see how it goes. But sometimes you can't predict it. And, you know, well, you know that McShay was a former quarterback, so he has a little bit of judgment in that. I still think it's going to be Herbert, and I still think that Tua goes five. I think that Love drops down. But, I mean, clearly he is a top 15 pick. It's just that I don't know if there's going to be a pick in the top 15 that's going to – a team in the top 15 that will take him then.
John, the 425 wants to know, will Ziggy Ansah find a team to play for in 2020?
I think so. He's still young enough to be able to do something, but it's going to be at a very reduced salary. He's not going to be able to get the $9 million that he got last year. And so, you know, and you saw that even as he was coming off the shoulder injury, he had to wait till May to be able to get a deal past the UFA period. So I don't see him getting anything before the draft, but then after the draft, it's a different game. And, you know, you can see, you know, Seattle was very active after the draft in trying to get as many players, you know, because they ended up getting, you know, like Al Woods and, you know, Ansah and guys that were starters. You know, they got Nick Valore and all that stuff. You know, what you can probably guess is the teams that were the most active, and I throw the New England Patriots in that regard, you know, they'll be trying to get those guys because they're not losing compensatory picks. And of course, right now for Seattle, they're not getting a compensatory pick, so that's not a big deal. But you know, a team like New England will wait past the draft and then try to load up. They'll probably, I would venture to say, like they did last year, they'll probably get 5-6 guys that were UFAs, unrestricted free agents, that become street free agents.
Professor, we were talking John? About Ugo Amadi earlier. Oh, I'm sorry, are we going to break? Sorry about that, Bob.
Go ahead.
I was just going to, really quick, I just want to mention a couple of, we were talking about what a great special team player he was last year, and somebody texted in, they're right, Doug Baldwin was an awesome special team player. Remember his rookie
in
second
absolutely.
Year? He blocked a punt or two. And then, you know, you had guys like Fred Young back in the day, Rufus Porter. We were talking about Ben Obomanu. So there's been some good special team players here for this franchise.
I mean, Barkevius Mingo, when he came in here for the year or so, he was a good one, too. So, yeah, you need good special teams players. And that was, I think, really, when you look at it last year, that draft had a lot of good special teams players on it.
John, good stuff. We'll talk again tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
There you go, the Professor John Clayton with us every day. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com.